Welcome to the True Safety Podcast with Apollonia Rockwell, where each week you hear from safety industry experts and leaders discussing safety culture, team development, and the future of the safety industry. If you are looking for help with your safety program or have questions, head to truesafetyservices.com/podcast. Let's get started.
All right. Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening in. I am your host, Apollonia Rockwell, CEO, founder of True Safety here out of Colorado. And I am so excited to talk to you with a special guest, somebody that I'm really, really interested to dig more into his story. But today we have Paul Hensel. And Paul is TEDx speaker and author of Crushed Alive, a true story of a journey from tragedy to triumph. And before we even get into it, Paul, how are you doing this morning?
Doing great. Thanks very much for having me. I'm excited.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. I want to just get into it, but, yeah. I mean, we'll kind of back into it at all, but I mean, tell the audience just a little bit about your story, you know, take us from the beginning. I know you worked at a mill at the time of this incident, of the beginning of the story that you're sharing with the world. I want to go back before that. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So, do you want me to talk about at the time of my accident or before that?
Yeah, just a little bit before that. So, I mean, how long, you know, were you working in that industry for quite some time before the incident, or was it right out of?
Yeah, it was probably around my 20th year. I kind of started working in the lumber industry out of high school.
Okay.
Never thought I would go to college or anything like that.
Yeah.
Money paid well. And I moved up fairly quickly in the places I was at, like with lumber grading, and that certification, I did real well in that. And then kind of moving up the ranks to like foreman and supervisor and stuff like that. So,
all right. So then you were rewarded by production. You said you moved up quick. So, I mean, you must have been a fast learner and did whatever you were told for the most part, or what was it like?
Yeah. Because of my lumber grading, I was kind of able to supervise the different mills, at this one place. That's kind of why they moved me up to supervisor, just with my kind of grading expertise. How I was with customers. So I was the youngest at the time to be promoted kind of in that rank.
Yeah.
That particular day was a little over 12 years ago.
Okay. All right.
And it was, we were on a new cut. So we had a new customer, and it was just extremely fast and busy, fastest cut we do in a lumber mill. So, I was supervisor at that time, and things were going quickly that day.
And how long you had been at the mill at this time, or at that company? How long had you been there?
Probably close to 10 years.
At the company point. And in the industry in total, it was around 10 years at this time.
20 in the industry.
Okay.
10 at that particular place.
Okay. All right.
So, the wood we were cutting that day is called, they're called cants. So they're 14 inches thick. They're like 21 inches wide, and each piece weighs at least 1,000 pounds. So it's like taking the round parts off of a log. Mm-hmm. So that's what we were cutting. So it's like you're skimming the round part off and you're getting that wood out as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. Now, one of these pieces ended up jamming up on its edge against a large steel beam.
Okay.
In between the different layers where these big pieces of wood came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I made the decision to crawl into this tight confined space to manually free up this cant that was stuck on edge. And so I pulled the knife switches down. I didn't put my lock on.
Yeah.
And just jumped in. And as soon as that log was freed, mm-hmm. The machine started. Mm-hmm. And I was being crushed alive by 12,000 pounds of wood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I could hear my body cracking, mm-hmm. gurgling, and crunching. Mm-hmm. It felt like my head was going to explode. There was so much pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, if this doesn't stop, I'm going to die.
Absolutely.
I then blacked out. Now, I was not breathing and without oxygen for about 12 minutes.
That's unbelievable.
Now, my coworkers had to perform miraculous feats of strength just to rescue me from that machine in that time frame.
Yeah, yeah.
And after around those 12 minutes, was pulled out. Every single person thought I was dead.
Yeah.
And then right before they were about to perform CPR, miraculously, I started breathing. Now, I do want to mention the main safety superintendent at that mill, who mm-hmm. he couldn't go on after seeing me, so he couldn't even do his job. So luckily, one of my heroes at Industrial First Aid, mm-hmm. who was there, helped him get me out, and he took over, and he was fantastic. So good thing there was someone else there. And I just remember like how kind and thoughtful he was. And I remember him asking if, can you move your fingers and toes? And I could. So I thought, okay, I'm not paralyzed, so this is good.
Yeah.
I would have been airlifted to the hospital if I wasn't responsive. Mm-hmm. So then they rushed me to the hospital by ambulance. Mm-hmm. And that ambulance ride, I remember, was horrific, because I could feel every vibration and bump through my spine. I remember there was a lot of confusion in the ambulance. They couldn't find a consistent pulse on me anywhere. So there was conversations back and forth between the two paramedics of kind of what was happening. I was confused. I had no idea what was happening.
Yeah.
Gosh. Mm-hmm. And when I get to the hospital, again, like just a lot of confusion and panic, a lot of different people moving around, and I couldn't see at the time because I didn't have my glasses, obviously. Yeah. And I remember asking, like, okay, what exactly is up? Like, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
And happened? I was told, without a shadow of a doubt, your clavicle is shattered. Your ribs are shattered. Probably your lungs punctured. You have a brain injury. Can't even begin to tell you about your back or your spine until they do a proper CT. But we're mainly concerned about your organs.
Yeah.
And so at that time, my organs were failing, which I had no idea about crush syndrome, what that does to your body, you know, the sepsis that occurs and stuff like that. So I'm in the hospital. That's happening. And I'm thinking to myself, something has to change, because, again, I really thought I was going to die.
Yeah, of course.
Then I was touched by an angel, and that was my wife.
I was just about to ask, what family, what was the situation at this time? So they're calling your wife. What in the world? I mean, now she can talk about this incident, but what was she told? What was that initial phone call? Who called her? Was this one of your coworkers? Who ends up getting in touch with her? And what did they initially say?
Yeah. And her story's very different from mine, but she was called by the superintendent of our mill.
Okay.
And he basically said, Paul's been in a very serious accident and you have to get to the hospital now. Mm-hmm. And it was from what I was told, it was pretty vague.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't answer the questions around like how serious is he going to make it. It was just you just kind of kept repeated it that you have to come to the hospital now. And his tone was very, kind of somber. Mm-hmm. and quiet, if I will. He even offered to pick up my wife and drive her.
Of course. Yeah.
I remember her thinking, no, I'm not going to wait for someone to pick me up. I'll just drive there myself.
So that, I could only imagine. My husband also works in an industrial construction, oil and gas type of company. And me receiving that phone call, I can't imagine. And so she receives that phone call. She gets no answers, no details. And I understand that that coworker who called her probably didn't have the answers himself. And so she's, I can't, freaking out is not even, that's an understatement. Yeah. So her mind is blank. She's in shock. She's driving to the hospital. What happens? She finally rushes through everyone to see you.
Yeah. And there was quite the ordeal with her getting there. I remember her saying that, like on the way, she would just repeat to herself, I'm not going to lose my best friend today. Yeah. But at that time, it was 2010. We live in Vancouver and the Olympics were going on at that point. So the torch relay was happening in the city. So I know that kind of it made things complicated for the ambulance to get to the hospital, but for my wife, it was just like, I don't know, like a detour after detour, finally getting to the hospital, but being kind of told conflicting things of where I was. So it was just unbelievable for her to finally get there.
I can imagine.
And, but she came at the most perfect time. And I just, she touched me. She couldn't recognize me because I was all kind of crushed, disfigured, just bruised, bloody, everything else. But I just remember that touch just kind of calmed me. And I thought, well, I'm not alone now.
Yeah.
So I can move on. And now also that day, it was my son's 16th birthday.
So, just about to ask, did you have any kiddos at this time? So just one?
No, two.
Two. All right. Okay.
Older daughter. And I think she was maybe around, how old is she? Probably 20.
Okay.
And our son was 16. So,
okay.
And I know when they arrived at the hospital, it was just kind of pretty tough seeing me as my, both of my eyes were completely filled with blood. And I had what they call petechiae. And it's
that
extreme, it's like extreme bruising and, all your kind of vessels pop underneath your skin. So it was my whole face, upper body was like the deepest purple, red spots, brown. And I found out later that that severity of petechiae that they call it is usually found post-mortem in strangulation victims. So it was like, it was just probably about as worse, as bad as you can get. And so I had no idea at that time what I looked like. It was just seeing the reaction of people when they came in to see me.
Okay. And so your kids get there, your wife is there, and then are you immediately heading into surgery? I mean, I can only imagine the initial surgeries, but then we'll get into the journey after.
Now, not to say I didn't need any at the time, but I didn't go through any surgeries. So there was kind of like a lot of confusion among doctors, nurses, kind of, you know, what was happening.
It's a complicated incident.
Yeah. But I was able to make it out fortunately. And so there's a lot of invisible injuries I do have.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So I have a permanent brain injury and cognitive disorder. Mm-hmm. So I kind of explain, it's like having a concussion that doesn't go away. So I have throat damage, lung damage, quite bad spine damage, shoulder damage, mm-hmm. Nerve damage, all kind of upper body, right side mainly. And of course, also PTSD.
Yeah.
From that.
Yes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's things I do now, like kind of physical modalities that I still have to do this time later. Like I see a manipulative physiotherapist that specializes in concussions. He's been great. So I see him, but I get 70 to 90 injections in my head, spine, and shoulder, and my back every 4 months. So Botox to help with headaches, migraines, and facet block injections, and a number of other things for my spine and nerve damage. So,
and this is 12 years later, still the rehab, the intensive care, and the everlasting injuries that I can, mentally and physically. So let's talk about both. So mentally afterwards, let's say it's a couple months after the incident, what is primarily going through your mind at this time? Because I'm going to assume you're home, and the journey to recovery is, I mean, barely beginning, even months after, 6 months, 12 months afterwards. And so what was that like mentally? What was going
on? So right afterwards, there was like small improvements, but before this, like I was completely healthy. I hadn't even, broken a bone in my life, except a finger, like playing baseball or whatever else. So that's kind of the extent of that. I rarely got sick. So I was kind of naive to exactly what was going on. I remember at times thinking, well, probably give me like 3 to 6 months and I'll be fine. But that's kind of not the case. There were so many different complications. It was kind of at the time dealing with, what was the most important one, or what are your major symptoms around this, and we'll kind of look at that, right? Mm-hmm. And then kind of finding out that know a lot of the things that you have, you're going to end up dealing with, you know, for the rest of your life. And that's
forever. Mm-hmm.
That's really, really hard to deal with kind mm-hmm. of mentally, like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that was really tough, but I do want to share one thing that helped me probably the most out of, like, you know, mindset strategies, yes. physical modalities, was sharing my story.
Yeah. Okay.
And so everybody, at first everybody wanted to, you know, like I coach football. I was an announcer at my son's high school with football. And so you know, a lot of the kids' parents would come by and, you know, ask me how I was doing, but they all wanted to, how did you survive this?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
you know, what happened? And so I'm kind of constantly sharing my story. And at mm-hmm. first that was really hard, kind of going through that. I remember just feeling like exhausted. I would share with people, and it was kind of like, wow, it just feels like I got hit by a truck.
Wow.
But it got better and easier. And, you know, that kind of turned like more healing and therapeutic, working through parts of my story. But like my wife and kids were fantastic. I said, there's no way I'd be here if it wasn't for my wife and her support. And just around like the number of like pills and narcotics I had to be on at first.
Yeah.
But, and not knowing anything about that, but her, mm-hmm. you know, nicely kind of telling me that, you know, a lot of these things are highly addictive. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. kind of like, be careful. And I would not be here if it wasn't for her. And we awesome. Both made a decision from the beginning to like focus on the positive aspects of my story.
Okay.
And that helped. So, you know, kind of fast forward like 6 years after that, I went back to school, finished my business degree, which was extremely hard. I wrote my book, Crushed Alive, right after that.
Okay.
And my wife was running various networking events. She had quite a large chapter at the time. And so I would kind of start telling my story, you know, just among family, friends, like smaller networking meetings, and it just through word of mouth, and people being inspired by the story and kind of how I came through that, it just kind of turned into larger and larger events. Did a TED talk the year or two after I wrote my book.
What was that experience like? Oh my gosh. Well,
that I still remember, that was probably one of the most exciting experiences. Like, obviously the nervousness, mm-hmm. you know, at, like going through, like at the time doing a TED talk, but just, I was the only one who got a standing ovation at the end, which was just unbelievable, but it was just awesome. Having that experience going through that, it was like a thrill.
Yeah. Congratulations. That is just such a huge accomplishment. Wow.
Yeah. And then from there, just being invited to larger and larger events. And I've spoken at a number of large international conferences.
So what are some of the things? Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's fine. Go ahead.
Just with, you know, after TEDx and the networking events, just sharing your story, what are the most common questions that you get asked, and what are your responses to those? I mean, I know mine, like my number one question is, you know, what was one of the things that you did like mentally to get through such a tough time? You know, were there any techniques? Was there any daily practices to help get you through? But other than that, what are some of the main questions that people have?
That is one of the main ones. Okay. And so from the beginning, I used positive affirmations.
Yeah.
So I would kind of post a few on my mirror every morning, when I got up. So I'd, read some of my favorite positive affirmations.
That's great.
And I remember allowing myself when I was going through rough times to have that time period, but then you can't stay in this. You can't stay
allowing yourself to feel it, which I like. Yeah. That I really like that, allowing yourself to feel all the emotions and to validate your emotions with yourself, but then not allowing yourself to stay in that space and get moving, get up. Yeah.
Part of that was realizing I felt I was kind of burdened enough with my wife and family, like mm-hmm. everything, like her life changed, like, yeah. Kind of having to drive me to appointments and everything else, and mm-hmm. like taking care of me mm-hmm. more on a regular basis. And, mentally what she was going through, and just realizing I didn't want to be any more of a burden than I probably already was. So it's kind of getting out of that. And I remember, when I could, feeling this way was, all right, tomorrow or today wasn't as good as I thought, tomorrow would be better. And yeah. I would just keep telling myself that. And kind of like letting myself like take small steps and realizing like that's still progress, understanding that, okay, this mm-hmm. isn't going to be a quick heal or whatever else. So I did what I could do until I could do more. But I just remember my wife, started taking me on short walks, and then those got longer. And, just the way she was, and helping me be positive and focusing on the positive aspects of my story, and then sharing that with others was really helpful.
Absolutely.
And therapeutic. It kind of helped me realize that, that this definitely isn't the end. It's the beginning. Mm. So when I changed my story, I changed my life.
When you change your story, you changed your life. I think that that's so powerful there. And I think that obviously not a lot of people can relate to experiencing a workplace accident, but a lot of people can relate to experiencing depression, maybe a stale moment in life, a really down time in life. I think that that happens more frequently than anybody likes to admit, just experiencing a rut, feeling hopelessness, and just a stuck feeling. And, some of the tactical things that you just shared with the audience are brilliant. Number one, posting your positive affirmations and making them visual. I mean, it's one thing to have somebody tell you, well, think good thoughts. And it's like, well, what the heck does that even mean? But if you actually get those positive affirmations written somewhere in your bathroom, in your, on your mirror, in your bedroom, in your house somewhere, but something visual to just help remind you anytime that you pass that place, okay, I'm healthy. I'm alive. I'm gifted. Today's another day. And then also, I love what you said there at the end, is your perspective on the story, on your story changed. And because you could absolutely have every right in the world to have a different perspective of that story of woe is me, a victim mentality, which you have every right. I mean, you almost lost your life at your workplace. And so having a different perspective, creating your own story about the events that happened to you changed everything. And so a lot of people can relate to, hey, something really bad happened to me. But you know what? If I look at it a little bit different, and if I think maybe this happened for me and not to me, then I have some hope that this is just the beginning for me. And I think that that's so powerful. I know that every single person in the audience listening today can relate to that. And I just, you know, it is really inspiring that you were able to take tragedy to triumph and move forward to such an event. And, you know, one thing, you might not get asked. I was asking, what are some of the questions that you get from a safety professional? You might not get asked this a lot, but you know, one thing, just kind of wrapping up this conversation, one thing that stood out to me is, no one stopped you when you jumped in that piece of equipment, you know, to unclog it. Am I right? I guess I'm asking. I mean, you made a rash decision. And we all make mistakes, but no one around every one of your coworkers knew what you were doing was wrong. You know, nobody was surprised. And so nobody stopped you, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's one thing, being a safety podcast, or, you know, not really a safety podcast, but, you know, we talk about safety a lot, is that it's not just the person that's being injured and the person that got into an incident. It's also a culture of safety where the people around you, we have to become your brother's keeper. We have to be somebody that's looking out to the next person, because I've experienced working on a ton of incident investigations with near death incidents. And every single time the team member involved, the human involved, was like, I knew what I was doing was wrong. You know, it was just a rash decision. I knew. But also interviewing everyone around them, they were like, they're just as responsible, because the level of guilt that those team members working alongside them said, I knew what that person was doing was wrong, and I sat back and I let it happen. And so I think that's the magic. That's something that we could take away as workers, is, you know, we need to stand up, not just for ourselves, but we need to stand up for the person we're working next to too, and make sure that they're safe. I mean,
I think having open discussions, but really bring storytelling into this, because stories are going to connect you in ways that, you know, that a manual cannot.
Absolutely.
And really, like in my experience, you know, not being, you know, safety expert or professional, but it's most accidents I saw was, you know, kind of taking a shortcut. So I would tell people, absolutely don't. I was one of those people who, you know, never got into an accident, thinking, no, I'm safe, everything's good.
Absolutely.
But like one time I took a shortcut, but that can change your whole life or end it in a split second. So I would just say, don't take shortcuts. Like, absolutely. But I think it's sharing stories like this that are going to reach people that other ways can't, that might break through, you know, like some of that culture, talking to people who have done it, been there, who maybe, you know, was like me before. Oh, I've avoided accidents. Okay. Mm-hmm. How did you? But, you know, have you ever done anything that kind of cut it close, or, you know, those kind of conversations, or speaking to people who have had accidents, or what could you have done differently? That kind of thing. And bringing those conversations in and really kind of opening it up. Like stories activate 7 areas of your brain. And so, you know, it's not like just reading a manual or someone telling you something where the language processing parts are activated. It's every other area of your brain that you would use when experiencing the events of the story yourself. And Like, you know, research has shown that stories are the most effective in if you want to inspire someone to make a true change in themselves, use storytelling. So
I completely agree with you. And especially coming from the safety side, where I know that having a safety meeting, talking about the OSHA regulations on the PowerPoint isn't going to cut it. Like, no one is listening to that. No one can connect. And I completely agree with you. And studies do show that when we hear a story, all right, gosh, thank gosh, now I can wake up and I can actually engage in what this person is telling me. And your story, Paul, you're exactly right, is that that's the power in today's message, is that this will hopefully reach just one person that, you know, does have, will think twice, right? Because I will think twice about taking a shortcut on the job, because that is what it's about. You could tell every, you know, tell people until you're blue in the face, lockout, tag out, lockout, tag out, lockout, tag out. But hearing your story might be what they needed to hear to also find themselves in the same situation, you know, do a quick maintenance with, you know, without locking out. And then, but just hearing that might make somebody think twice. And that's all your story needed was to impact one person to save a life. So I'm so inspired, Paul, by your story and your strength to persevere and to share your story, to help others and to help inspire others. So you are up to big things. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time to talk with me today. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. I appreciate it. If I could just kind of end, I have a favorite quote. So if anybody's listening, if you believe it'll work out, you'll see opportunities. If you believe it won't, you'll see obstacles. And that kind of helped me through my situation. So if anybody's like going through something, realize your story can help. Embrace it. Embrace the positive aspects. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can turn things around. Don't take shortcuts. And if I can do it, I went from an injured mill worker to an international speaker. So you can do it too.
Oh my gosh, Paul, thank you so much. You've left the audience on such a beautiful note there. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And everyone, Paul's information will be linked on how to contact him, how to book him, how to reach him will be in the notes of this podcast. And, or if you're watching on YouTube, wherever you're watching or listening, Paul's contact information will be linked below. So thank you so much for listening.
If you could put inspiring.show, that's the one link that people can see our podcast, but they can also get a free downloaded copy of my book, Crushed Alive. So any listener can do that. So it's all right there at inspiring.show.
Perfect. Awesome. All righty, guys. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the True Safety Podcast with Apollonia Rockwell. If you are looking to save time and money with your safety program this year, we'd love to hear from you. Head to truesafetyservices.com/podcast to schedule a free call with our team, where we will help you identify the biggest opportunities for growth in your company and safety program, and we'll connect you with the right resources to help you grow. Again, that is truesafetyservices.com/podcast. Thanks so much for listening. We will see you next week. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to the podcast and share with your friends. If you know anyone who needs to hear this episode today, click the share button and send them this episode.